Welcome back to another episode of Life With Your Dog podcast. My name's Luke and I'm here with my good friend and co-host Panos. What's going on, man?
How you doing, my brother? I'm very good. Good morning. Yeah, we're getting used to these morning episodes, aren't we?
We are alive and blessed.
I think this is the first episode ever that I'm not caffeinated, just so you know.
Okay.
Everyone knows. Now, sometimes, obviously, if we're doing it nighttime, I've been caffeinated throughout the day, so this probably something happening, but I am fresh and I've had my scrambled eggs and water.
Good.
And some sunlight and a cold shower. So
we like to hear.
We had some of the routine in there. So if I'm not pepped up, then that's probably why. Number one. Number two is, I was thinking about this just early before we started, is that we talk about routine and structure of a routine. Don't be so set in routines. Some people may be freaking out that they had to do an activity that requires them to be caffeinated. And if you're so kind of used to it and we'll say addicted to the substance to perform, then we become a slave to that and not to our own faculties. Yeah. You know? So
has it become a habit or is it actually still helping you, you know?
Yeah, and I guess that comes down to dogs so much is that, you know, like for example, in just the last couple of days, people are like, oh my God, the dog's so nice when we're out walking. Why is he so nice now? And I said to him, because your routine is leash, door, out the front. You've just psyched the dog up in this heavy duty routine, which triggers them into a state of mind, into a behavior where we would do a little training session, explain things. The leash is on, the lead comes off, the lead goes on. We do some ball training, you know, give them the things they need to practice. And then leaving that door, making the dog sit and wait for the door to be open. The session's been now like, you know, 15 minutes already, 20 minutes of like doing different things before leaving that house. We've changed the dog's mindset. That's why it seems like I do some sort of magic, because now the dog's all calm and relaxed. It's because we've changed the dog's routine. You know, we want the dogs to be a little bit more open and to be receiving information throughout every step of the way. And I guess that will tether into our confidence building topic today, but I think that's really important. Switch things up as much as you can, because we do tend to lean towards a routine or some sort of patterns. It just is what it is. Like the reason why I like to say have that structure of a routine is because we gravitate towards routine and consistent sort of behaviors and habits, and we have to force ourselves to change it up a little bit. Like I could be in that extra 10 minutes and because I don't have any coffee at home, I could have driven, grabbed some coffee, come back like a little like an addict and be like, all right, cool, now we have to
need my fix.
Exactly. Where something that my sensei used to say all the time is, you got to master your maestro, the thing inside your head that is calling the shots and is calling the tempo. You need to control that thing that's then telling the rest of the body. So I think that's very interesting. Just like if your dog freaks out, they haven't had their meal at 6 o'clock, you should switch it up. Sometimes 4, sometimes 7. Switch it up a little bit so your dog's a bit more open to.
I don't think Shadow's ever had dinner or breakfast at the same time, ever. I just like, oh, it's time to feed you. That might be 3 o'clock. It might be 6 o'clock. It just depends.
100%. I think it's better for the dogs. It's better for us. But it's hard. Again, you have to really force yourself to go out of that routine. But today we're doing a joint Q&A, and I will apologize. I didn't get one out last week for you guys, but it's been really busy on our end. I had a lot of feedback from Boyd's episode as well. That was really fun and a lot of people enjoyed it. So you're welcome.
it was great. Thanks for coming on, Boyd. If you're listening to this, I don't know if you are, probably not. Thanks for coming on. It was a good time.
That was awesome, mate. We have a question from Callum come in, and I'll read out the question.
His last name's not Murray, I hope.
I don't think so.
Callum Murray.
Definitely not. And just for most people listening going, what the hell does that even mean? Well, calamari.
Yeah.
But I don't think Americans know what calamari is, right?
Oh, really?
I don't think they call it calamari.
What do they call it? Squid.
Squid. It is squid.
Is squid. It's just cut up into calamari.
into rings, right?
So, yeah. Wait, is that like... Is that like a Greek word or something, or what is it?
Let's ask Google.
Well, you're Greek, aren't you? You tell me.
Murray.
It sounds. I don't know. I feel like it sounds Greek to me. Where is it? What's the origin?
Italy.
We're like, there you go. Italy. Okay.
Calamari origin. Yeah, it sounds.
We're 2 minutes in and we're already on like a massive side quest.
So, Callum from Canine Curiosity sent in a question. and I'll read it out. G'day, Luke and Panos. I hope you guys had an amazing start of the year. Just want to say thanks for the hard work with the podcast. I'm loving listening along. I have a couple of topics interested in hearing your take. Firstly, appeasement could be an interesting one to delve into. And secondly, I find clients get confused when explaining confidence building exercises such as box feeding, nose works, agility, etc., as they don't understand how getting a dog to keep a dog in a box can build confidence. My understanding of that is that you're helping a dog overcome small challenges so you can build up bigger ones, but I'm interested to get your take. Thank you. So we'll just talk about appeasement behaviors. Like if a dog doesn't, okay, we'll go right down. What is confidence building? If your dog's struggling with having confidence within a certain situation, whether it's around other beings or whether it's in a certain environment, we want the dog to be strong and bold so that they can carry on through the experience feeling happy and neutral. And sometimes when you see a dog lacking confidence, they will react, bark, lunge, and growl. Sometimes it could be aggressive behaviors. And I don't think a lot of people put the two and two together where they see a dog that's being aggressive and them lacking confidence. And not all dogs that are aggressive are lacking confidence, but a lot of dogs that are lacking confidence will resort to aggression because that's a way for them to deal with their
environment. Same in humans. That's a lot of what's happening underneath bullying as well, is actually the bully has a lack of confidence.
And he overcompensates up by them putting it on others so that he can get the things that he wants, whether it's gaining a resource or feeling more secure about himself.
Security is a resource, right? Feeling secure.
Yeah, true. Like, look how strong I am. I can tell people what to do. So then saying that, talking about appeasement, just because now if you're too heavy on a dog or not just being heavy with a dog, but if we're looking for the dog to like show like, okay, cool, like I'm here and I'm submissive to the situation, it's nice that the dog now doesn't react, but now is he really confident in that moment of demonstrating some of those appeasement behaviors. Now, appeasement isn't a word that gets used a lot, so I'm just going to pull up the meaning. The act of giving the opposing side in an argument or war advantage that they demanded in order to prevent further disagreement. Obviously, that's for humans. We'll just put a dog one in
there.
It's
kind of like peacemaking, I guess, right? It's like you kind of lower your position in order to just kind of bring it to an end.
So they like this is just another like random just at the top of Google. So again, and just another thing is me and Luke jumped into this session today and I didn't really appropriately
get we had notes. A short list of topics to choose from and this was the one that floated to the top.
And I haven't really, and I normally like to prepare with notes, but I haven't because it's been a busy week. So, but I don't mind doing the Jamie work and doing a bit of Googling while we're right. And I do know what it is, but I like to give the actual meaning. So they may wag their tail, but often stop wagging and freeze when touched. These for the threat to stop and no desire for confrontation.
Just read that again, Panos. You froze up for a second. Okay. Just that last bit, yeah, what you were reading there.
They may wag their tail, but will often stop wagging or freeze when touched. These postures are often described as appeasement behaviors because they communicate a desire for the threat to stop and no desire for confrontation. In dog language, these postures are very clear and logical signals. So you may have a dog showing appeasement behaviors because now they stopped the reactivity, but are they confident within that moment? Because if they were confident, they probably wouldn't be showing those appeasement behaviors. Coming up to you, hey, I'm here, and, you know, it's okay, and, you know, and they're just trying to stop the threat. But it could be a part of the process, but just because you have a dog going, see, look, when I'm here, he listens. And it's like, well, he looks like he's trying to deal with the situation. But the good thing about it is that he's dealing with it in a different way. He's trying to change. Well, like, is a dog trying to change, or is he responding to the things that we're providing him so that he could change the outcome of the situation?
Yeah.
So for example, let's just say I mouth off to people when they look at me and I'm not confident. They look at me and I'm like, oh, what are you looking at? Compared to, let's just say over time, I've had some intervention. Now I can't react to people when they look at me because I'm a not confident person. But then I try to like, hi, how are you? And I go and like shake their hand and, you know, and I'm patting on the shoulder and I'm like, I'm okay. And is there anything I could do?
Yeah.
It's now not showing any reactivity or any undesirable behavior, but now we still have to address the fact that we want the dog to be confident. So in saying that, and confidence building is a really big thing in our training, especially in behavior modification, and especially with like building puppies' confidence, it's so important that we're looking at, are we truly making that confident dog understand to be neutral and happier in that situation? Now, not just happy, because happiness isn't a good goal. It's more about being neutral in that environment. So yesterday, we in class three of the puppy classes that I just started doing, which was actually really fun, had about six puppies there, and we did a massive school, so it's not a little enclosed area. But for example, one of the clients said he walked down he just as he left his driveway, the dog saw a person, the dog started to bark at the person. And he doesn't do that anywhere else except for in front of the driveway. So maybe there's some territorial behavior. The dog is like a massive cross. So there's some territorial behavior happening there in the beginning, happened also inside the car, but nowhere else. So that probably isn't so much about the dog's lacking confidence, because in other contexts, he'll be okay with people approaching him.
Yeah.
But there's some sort of territorial behavior happening there that's starting to be, they're starting to manifest that, I guess in one way or another, if you are being territorial and have to vocalize it, then I guess you're not super confident. Now that's not a hard fact, because dogs are territorial because they like, hey, get off my property. But but does that mean that they're not confident? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm standing in front of my house and someone walks by, I don't you think about coming in here? Like there's a sense of confidence by saying you don't come into my space.
What if they did come in though?
And they come in, then I may have to bite you. Yeah. Or I'll demonstrate some sort of behavior to try to, you know, push you away. But territorial behavior, I don't think is a lack of confidence. But in that moment, looking at that puppy as well, he freaks out. Someone's coming into my safest place. This isn't cool. Hey, go away. Boom, boom, boom. You know, I've got a genetic disposition for this behavior. So there's a lot to it when it comes to reading dogs' body language and their behavior. So, but that puppy's going through a bit of a fear period, you can tell. He's about 16 weeks old, and it's just random little things. Like last week and the week before, like things didn't really bother him so much, but now it seems like it is. So in regards to what we did in that session is that, and it was already planned anyway, was getting the dogs desensitized to sound, getting them used to me opening an umbrella. Like, it's really odd. If you have an open umbrella in front of a puppy, most puppies freak out. They're like, what is that thing?
Mm.
And so as I deployed it now, as soon as I pressed the button, I thought it was just going to come out ordinarily, but it came out like a bomb. And then one of the puppies, like, tail tucked, looked at the thing and, like, was about to back up. In that moment there, just for puppy confidence building, one of the exercises is getting the puppy to check back in on you, and then marking and rewarding and having a bit of fun. I did it like 4, 5, 6, 7 times. And then after that, you know, that the last one, most puppies were just looking at it like blankly, like whatever. They looked back at their owner. They had a bit of a fun game and it wasn't too much of a big deal. So one way of dealing with confidence building is your clarity and communication. What do you want the puppy or the dog to do in that moment?
Mm.
If they're scared of the umbrella deploying, first of all, you need to identify what is your dog lacking confidence in. Is it when you're walking upstairs? Is it walking in busy environments? Is it when somebody comes over the house? So to build some confidence, we want clarity. And through clarity, we want to improve your communication. So number one thing is that you need to have you should have a strong marker. You should have some reasonable control over your dog. So for puppies, have them on a harness. Or for an adult dog, have them on a slip lead or some sort of martingale collar. Have something that you can control the dog with effectively. If we can't control the dog physically, then the dog will demonstrate behaviors that they may seemingly find success in controlling the environment.
Yeah.
A dog barking at another person, if they're off the leash and they run up to them and they start nipping them on the heels, and or if they're so scared that they run off and they hide underneath a car, then those behaviors specifically don't, like for the dog, makes them feel like I'm dealing with this situation. But our ideal outcome is that the dog sees the umbrella or sees the person or hears the loud sound and you're just like, meh, like that doesn't even bother me. Where if you have to try to do something when something happens, you're still reacting to that stimulus, which then means that there is still an underlying issue.
Yeah.
So if you're not clear in communicating and you have good management over your dog, then that's all going to go to shit. So one of the episodes you should listen to is like the more recent one that we did about reactivity. I think it was episode 200. That one kind of breaks down just the reactivity piece of it. And I think within that, we talked about confidence building. A lot of desensitization techniques and counter conditioning is about building confidence. Because if you're desensitized to the bike, the motorbike going past, and if you're desensitized,
it's just white noise, just background noise.
Exactly. So back to his question here. So first of all, we need to know what is the thing that you're trying to build confidence over. I think that's really important. If you're just going generally, I want my puppy or my dog to be confident, I just don't think that's enough for you to be able to pinpoint and be able to have some pragmatic steps towards an outcome or a goal. So let's pull up his question. So now some people may be going, what's he talking about box feeding? What does that mean? So you go to Canine Paradigm, you listen to Pat Stewart talk about the box.
There's no way we can explain it better than him.
I'll give a little brief rundown.
Just Google Pat Stewart box feeding and whatever comes
message
up.
Message him and go, hey, what's the box?
What's the
dimensions of the box? No. So box feeding in a nutshell, look, I've never done it with a dog. So I just thought I'd put that caveat out there before I continue. But to my understanding, from what I've seen and what I understand of it, is that you have a box, doesn't matter what size the box is, and you teach the dog, and this is for, and you're feeding your dog existentially, which means your dog gets all of their kibble from you, from your training. So it's not necessarily like a random activity. I would prefer that it becomes a way that your dog gets fed. So you have the box there, you teach the dog every time, and you put a washer in the bottom there.
Which is a signal to tell the dog that the work is on or the restaurant is open.
For sure. But right now, like nothing, none of it means anything, right? Mm. We're standing there and we're doing a bit of free shaping. Free shaping is that you're not guiding the dog directly to do a behavior, waiting for them to spontaneously offer a behavior and then you mark and reward. So in this case, you're standing in front of the box, the dog looks inside the box, you say yes, and you drop the treat or drop the food into the box. The longer he keeps his head in the box, the more you drop some food in. Again, sorry if I'm going to butcher this.
Mm.
If the dog pops his head out of the box, you don't feed. He puts his head back in the box, you continue feeding. When the session's over, you tell him finish by removing the washer. Now you told him that the work's done. You can put your head as much as you want in there, but without the washer there, there is no reward. So then the more you do this, the dog starts to realize, cool, I put my head in the box, and that's how I get fed. But another thing is, once the dog now starts putting his head in the box, you want their nose to be sitting on top of the washer. So you want to be even more specific about what you want. So eventually, just through random rewarding, or not random reward, but like specific rewarding, as soon as your dog touches the nose on the washer, you continue dropping the food in there. And the idea here is that you're teaching the dog, you know, in Pat's words, like, you know, how to meditate, to be focused on one task. More importantly, we want to do this so that eventually we go out into an environment where the dog will be exposed to a stimulus. If they bop their head out, they don't get food. They keep their head on the washer inside that box. They continue to get fed. So this is another way to be able to desensitize them and build strength and that confidence with the things that are happening around. So it could be I'm pretty sure it was Jess Ward. Her dog had an issue with getting vaccinated, could not get vaccinated or any needle from the vet. So she did box feeding. What's that?
Wouldn't accept it.
Wouldn't cop it. And I'm pretty sure he'd be like aggressive over it, if I can remember that correctly. So, well, we'll just run that story anyway. So she eventually got to the point where she would go into the vet. She was probably doing a lot of box feeding in the vet. So she'll go there for the dog's meal. Then one day she would go there while the dog, like, and just throughout her training from remembering her talk about it, while the dog's nose is in the box, you'd like touch the dog with the pen. If his head bops out, nothing happens. Head go back in. You have to ignore the fact that you're getting touched with like different objects while your head's still in the box and being fed. So then when she went to the vet, she put the box out, put the washer in there. Dog puts his head in there. She starts feeding. Vet administers the vaccine. Nothing at all happened. It was non-eventful. They just left. So it was all good. Or it could be that your dog is, you know, blowing up over a different, like, let's just say cars driving past. Or can you get your focus within on this washer while the other things are happening around? So that's like a real quick, in a nutshell, what the box feeding is. Now, this can translate into heaps of other different behaviors, but you also kind of teach the dog how to focus on one task and not get zoned out. And that confidence will be that while this is happening, whatever's happening outside the box isn't going to affect you. And I think that really does come down to who's standing outside the box feeding the dog. If they didn't have a connection with that person, they probably wouldn't do the behavior as well. And then that means that they don't have trust with that one individual.
Mm.
But we won't go too much into the box only because I just will be out of my lane. But he also asked about nose works, agility, etc. So I think in a massive way, teaching a dog how to, you know, do nose works and agility will build the confidence, because first of all, they have to do, like, you're giving the dog some sort of purpose, some sort of job. You're giving them something to do. The more you have things to do and you get outcomes for those things, you build a competence, builds confidence. The more you're competent in something, the more confident you become.
Yeah, it's a positive feedback loop as well.
100%. So dog does a difficult thing, like go up an A-frame, has to hold at the top of the A-frame until you release them back down. There's obviously pure confidence in standing up high on an A-frame and balancing yourself and also having trust in handler. You know, you're teaching your dog how to overcome situations while they're happening. And I think that's a big one as well. You have to be able to read the dog's body language if you're doing things like nose works and agility, because you're watching the dog in them problem solving, because, you know, agility is pretty fast paced. You've got to be running from each point to point. You're telling them to do specific ways. No, don't go over the jump that way. Go around that thing and then come back over the jump this way. This communication, dog has to be like watching you. You have to be watching the dog. And that's how you're starting to know the dog on a more intimate level. And then through that process, because it's not like do agility training, are your dog confident with random people. Another point would be you're going to trials or you're going to training. You're bringing your dog into an open environment where there's new dogs, new people, new different things happening. And through that experience, the dog's becoming desensitized, because a lot of the times we don't have enough goals of our training. Like, oh, I want my dog to be confident. I want to be confident. And then I would say, confident in what specifically? And then be like, let's just say they say public speaking. Be more specific. Well, my friend's wedding's on next month and I need to do a speech and I want to be confident so I'm not saying ums and ahs and I can just deliver the speech properly without fainting. So that's so specific. So what you would do then is say, well, that's so specific there. Well, first of all, let's have a speech that you can actually read, maybe not too long, so you don't get overwhelmed. Because if you have a very long speech, you're being so overwhelmed, even before it's even happened, you're going to buckle it. If you know that you got a speech that's relatively short, it's to the point and it's a nice speech that can help someone write it up, I guess, but you have enough that you're not overwhelmed approaching it. You're going to practice it in the mirror. You're going to practice it in front of your friends. You're going to memorize it to the point where you understand what the words are, so you're not keep looking down. And the next thing you want to do is like keep your head up and look at different people in the audience when you're talking. Like find three people to look at in three different parts of the room and just keep looking at them. You're talking to three people. You're not talking to 50 people.
Yeah.
So just those little points of contact help you kind of stay on track, stay on point with the task. So that way there we can at least address the whole entire thing. Because now someone may still clunk their way through the speech and it may look good, but for them they feel clunky. But out from the outside, it's like, yeah, that was a very nice speech. Good work, man. But they still may not be confident. They still may have done it, but they're not confident. So maybe you need to do like another 10 speeches this year.
Be more exposure. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exposure, like for me, builds confidence.
100%. Like, I'm used to talking to people. I talk all day. I talk in front of bigger groups. Sometimes I have two families have come together for the dogs and there's like, you know, 10 people in the room.
Yeah.
And, you know, and most of the time it's only one or two people. But even if there's two people, or when I'm at group class, I can't just keep my eye on one person. I keep my head turning around, looking at everyone else around me. So there's skills that need to be learned. Now, I actually, you know, on Saturday, I have to read a speech at a friend's wedding. So when I write it, I still have to write it. That's on my list today. I've got the dot points for it anyway. But when I write it and I have to read it out, I'm still going to feel a little bit nervous. Like, that's just normal.
I think that's just a sign that you're taking it seriously.
Yep, that's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you weren't nervous, then I think you wouldn't care.
That's true.
Yeah.
I do like that.
I think it's just excitement, you know?
Exactly.
Like, oh yeah, how's this going to go? Like, that's just your body telling you, like, hey, this is important.
True. That, as well as it's inherent within our biology, through an evolutionary track, is that we're supposed to be scared of public speaking, because speaking in front of the 150 people of your village
could get you killed.
Could get you killed or expressing the wrong opinion.
Banished or whatever, you know, kicked out.
Mm-hmm. And I say 150 people because Dunbar's number is that, you know, we used to be in communities with up to about 150 people, and you can only keep up close-ish relationships up to 150 yep. people. Any more than that, you can't keep track just on an evolutionary basis.
There were like, I'm going to say 250 people at my wedding, but half of them didn't speak English because they're all Cambodian. So exactly. I don't know if it counts that I did a speech in front of that many people or not. But like-
You saw the eyeballs on you. I still think-
Yeah, I wasn't nervous.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love
it. So it went pretty well, I guess.
Totally. So because I've had enough speaking in front of people and I've done in front of bigger groups, I've spoken in front of like, you know, 100 people and, you know, yeah. I've done speech at different events. So like,
yeah, what's I'm not the like, biggest group you've ever talked in front of? Like maybe those council fair days, you know, where you do those ones. There's usually a few people hanging around there, right?
Yeah, I think, but I've done one where I had to like be on a stage in front of like a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. About dogs, right?
Yeah. I would say.
What was that? What 80, event was that?
Maybe 100. Oh, okay. What was it?
Where
was
that's that? Decent.
Sailing club, I think. My there was 150 people.
What about your wedding? Wedding?
There was 150 people there. So.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was pretty.
That's cool. Pretty big.
People like the speech too. Mm-hmm. One little tip as well is don't read off your phone. Read off a piece of paper. Your phone, you like lose it. Your phone locks. You're like, where am I up to? It's so small writing. You look kind of odd as well, I think. Like,
yeah.
You know, when you're reading from your phone, like for the photos and stuff. So anyway.
I just had like really vague dot points and then I just kind of did the rest off the cuff and it seemed to work pretty well. Because I think if I tried to read it, it would put too much pressure on me to like read it perfectly. So I was just like, whatever, I'll just see how it goes. And it went pretty well.
Good point. Yeah. But the point here is that there's a lot of points of contact that helps you on track to the objective that you need to deal with so that it helps with the task. So teaching a dog nose works, agility training, you know, getting those puppies to walk up and down the stairs. We walk the stairs and walk along the second level of the school. And then while they were walking, I was like banging the side of the handrails. I was making like a bit of like a echoey sort of rumbling.
Yeah.
You know, it was very low level, but the pups were like, hey, what is it? And now one of the pups was like, what is going on? She's looking around. And I'm like, hey, Susan, just walk her up that way. And she's like, hey, Bear, this way. And then Bear like looked at her and just followed her. And then she came back and then she looked at her and then we left. And I said to her, it's not the fact that we experience the stress. It's how we deal with the stress after it's occurred. And that's where we're going to have a dog.
Yeah, you can't control the circumstance. You can't control the situation, but you can control your reaction to it.
Exactly. 100%.
Right?
Dog freaks out and you're like, are you freaking out?
Or it's maybe okay. Not your initial reaction, but like, you know what I mean? How you deal with that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Have the moment where she is looking around, tail's a bit tucked and being unsure. Now, appeasement behavior, which probably wouldn't be in this situation, it's more of a social one. But like if she's feeling submissive and I'm just sitting there patting her and just like not moving anywhere. And then she's like looking at me and she's like trying to jump up on me and I just keep patting her. And then, but I don't really give her like a way to deal with it. Then she'll just be a very nervous puppy around loud noises. And then that may become a nervous dog, doesn't know how to deal with random stimulus. So where in this moment, it was like, we say her name, the dog looks at us, good work. Sometimes it would be a little bit of a luring game. In this moment, I'm like, let's not play food games because food doesn't solve everyone's problems. While she's feeling a little bit unsure, let's move this way. And she's like, yeah. And we walked up over there and then just walking up 5 to 10 meters away from where the sound was, she recovered. We walked past it again. She sat there. She looked around. The noise happened again. She looked at my mum. She walked off. It showed that you have to be observant of your dog's body language. But also while that's, you have to know what you're looking at too. So you got to understand your dog and know what body language is. But then when you start to see those signs of fear, you want to give them an out, a way to deal with it. And then eventually we'll increase the threshold. It's like, yes, there's noise happening here. Let's hold a sit and look at me. It's all good. Yeah, there's some noise happening here, but we're doing the box here or we're doing a different activity. And eventually she's like, I hear noises in the background. It used to bother me, now it doesn't. So back to what I started at the beginning was, what is it that we're building confidence over? And then step by step, even back chain it, be like, well, the scary thing is X, and then we move back all the way to where the beginning would be. So that way you can plan where you're going to head, and you may want to plan on a piece of paper or plan it in your head, but you can't just go, my dog's scared of bridges, so I'm just going to go to that bridge and go over the bridge.
Mm.
and force the puppy over the bridge, or the puppy's going to jump on me and trying to like look for help. What I want to do is get to the base of the stairs and play a bit of tug maybe, or some food games, or just sit down at the base. You know, another thing is sometimes just sitting down in an environment, just stand around.
Observing and it, yeah.
Just hang around. Because a lot of times dogs aren't dealing with the world because they're either in food drive the whole time, or they're constantly moving through the world and they're not really like just
observing. Taking it in, yeah.
And I think
that's actually one of the hardest things to teach a dog is to do nothing.
So hard.
And one of the most valuable.
Well, the reason why they can't is because people can't.
Yeah. But also I think like it's not a flashy thing to teach, right? They're like, I want to teach my dog to do X, Y, Z. It's like, how about you teach him to sit still?
Go to where there's street dogs and see what they're doing all day.
Nothing.
Like, just chill.
They sleep.
Obviously
sleep and scavenge.
Obviously they're scavenging and hunting at times and, you know, dealing with their own social situations, and you know, there's a bitch in heat, we have to deal with that, and there's a bit of fighting happening, so there's stuff going on, but they're not like buzzing themselves all day. But in saying that, most of our dogs do nothing all day. Like three of my dogs are sitting in the backyard right now just sunbathing,
chilling.
But when we leave the house, it's go 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 until we get home. So because of course we've got things to do, I've got to get the dogs out so I can, you know, go to work, get dinner ready, sort the kids out for school, all that sort of stuff. So you're so busy, you're living in a timeline that this one to do, this little chore of getting the dog out becomes this like rush of a thing. And yeah, he doesn't like that corner there because a dog barked at him once and the thing crashed at the same time the dog barked, and now he's like kind of freaked out. So we just avoid that. And for me, I say, no, that's a place where we go. We go to the base of the bridge and we hang out and we just hang out. Now, that's not always going to fix it, obviously, but it's a step one to kind of keep the dog under a different level of intensity, anxiety, you know, keep them a bit more calm. Also, you be calm. And when the dog starts to calm down a little bit, now we can start going, hey, do you reckon you can offer me this bay over here? Let's do a cool, fun trick at the base of the bridge where we're scared at. And then let's just say 5 days go by and now we're like, hey, now we play luring games up and down the stairs getting to the bridge. And then when you get to the bridge, I'm working on certain behaviors, or you could be that, you know, if you're doing box feeding, take the box closer to that bridge. If you're doing agility training, maybe incorporate some sort of activity around the bridge to be like, oh, this is the place we do that thing. And this is the place where things are a bit dodgy, but I look at you. And if I'm focused on you, good things continue. And, you know, and that's how we, and again, like I'm bouncing around the place with different examples, but I'm getting you guys think about, what is it that makes the dog confident? Is it that now they're like, I don't care about the bridge? Or it's that, well, I care about my person who's at the bridge, and now I focus on him while we go through the bridge situation. And then we do that 55 times over the next month, and now I don't really mind the bridge. And if you do that with five other different things, then that may start compounding and cross-culturing towards other things. Like the dog, so with Chili like really struggled. Actually, in fact, the reason why Chili didn't get sold all around the world with his brothers for dock diving and other sporting applications was that he like lacked massive confidence. He was such a sook. If you watch the videos, Rachel kept him back because he just couldn't deal with much triggers. His triggers his threshold for triggers was so small, and he just was like super, super nervous. And
how did they work on that?
So with Rach, she kept him up until about a year old. She just did like ordinary stuff. Now, again, remember, she does live in Bilpin, and Bilpin is like past the mountains in the middle of kind of nowhere. She takes it half an hour to get to the Coles, her local kind of township. So you can see how rural and remote it is.
Yeah.
So he just adapted throughout life within that environment. He would time to time go to busier environments. Now, when I got Chilly, it wasn't like he got out of the car and he was like cowering and, you know, sure, pissing himself and stuff. So he wasn't like totally scared. But when he came to me, basically what I did as a quick little rundown, which I'm sure we've talked about another 100 times, is all of Chili's food came from the pouch. It was only kibble. Feed a lot of raw food to my dog, but I just fed him kibble for 2 months. In that process, the pouch was only on when we left the house. So we're out of the house. I've got the pouch on. I've got the leash on. Leash means food is on. Food means he's hungry because he doesn't get any other food other from my pouch. And that first couple of days, I just wanted to know, what are your triggers? What are you worried about? So we crossed the road, went down to the beach, the umbrellas, the kite surfers, and people holding like fishing rod or sticks. anyone that's holding a thing, even if I picked up a stick, you'd run away. Now, I know for a fact that no one beat him with a stick. I just know that.
Yeah.
I just also know that
he was just unsure.
Well, like a human with a stick is a dangerous thing. It was the first tool that we ever had.
Yeah.
It's the first weapon that we ever used. It's just, and dogs know that shit. Dogs could see a human holding a stick and be like, that could be threatening, right? Now, I did a few things. First of all, I did the actual techniques that you have to do to help a dog desensitize to a specific trigger. So counter conditioning.
Yeah.
Looks at the fishing rod guy. I say, look at me. I feed him. He looks at the fishing rod guy. I say, look at me. I feed him. There's a bunch of other things I was doing in that process. But essentially, eventually he would look at the fishing rod guy, growl a little bit, then look at me and I'd pay him. So then he's like, interesting. So then a couple of days later, he would see it in the distance before he starts grunting and growling because he's not having a feeling. He's not feeling overwhelmed and he's not coming up to me with his ears back and his tail tucked going, oh gosh, I'm here now. You know, like, let me deal with it. He's going, oh. And then he'd look at me, oh, and I reward him. So then got to a point where he'd just look at it and gone straight away. As soon as he looked at the fishing rod guy, he looks at me, boom, reward him, play with him, reward him. He looks at it, reward him. Then it got to a point where as a fishing rod guy was walking past us another week or two later, I had Chili in a down. I just told him to lay down. Actually, in fact, I didn't tell him to lay down. He just happened to be laying down because we were chilling in that environment. So we walked down to the beach area, the bay, and I just sat on the step, like sat on the little ledge there where the plants are. And I just had him there. And he's just like, we're going to stay here for 15 minutes, just watching the ocean. So with that, situations present themselves. This guy comes around out of nowhere, with a fishing rod guy from the fifth dimension. Out of a portal, but he came out of nowhere. And then Chili's like, hey, as soon as he looked at him walking past him, like, and it was pretty close, like within a meter, Chili's head was snapping between him and me until I rewarded that one. I go, and now from now on, I do not reward you for looking at fishing rod guys, because he now started getting way too bloody excited about it. Like he was happy. He was like, oh, he's here. And I want him to be
became a cue.
Exactly. Which is exactly what you want, right? But then I weaned off it. I stopped rewarding him just the other day. Literally walked right past a guy with a fishing rod. Didn't even look at him. Not even acknowledge him. So that would be like one thing that I did with Chili. Another thing was that I took him to the places where he didn't like often. Chili's confidence also struggled when I would train him on concrete. He just like would be weird and flat.
Yeah,
like,
you mentioned that. That was even up until more recently, right?
Yeah. So, and in that time, I've been just going to concrete and training him more on concrete, playing tug with him, throwing the ball in the tug, doing our healing and our different commands because it's slippery surface. He's running around like an erratic dog trying to gather his reward. It's going to be very hard for him to kind of keep his shit together when he's slipping and hurting himself potentially. So, he has to learn when you're on grass, you run a certain way. When in the concrete, you run a certain way.
Mm.
And I don't like make him run too much on the concrete in that fashion. But if I'm going to like play tug with him, he's still slipping and sliding.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I've told him to heal, he'll come into the heel. But when he turns into it, like not when we're walking, he slips, but turning into it, he may turn, like just lose a footing. And for him to like clunk it up a little bit, I'll be like, no, let's try it again. And then through holding him accountable at a certain extent and him showing his competence, he's like, you can just see now he's a lot more confident.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's not really like it was something that, oh, I forgot her name. She was on, the Canon Paradigm like 5 episodes ago. She's German, I think. I'll find it later and I'll mention if I have the capacity. Dr. Ude.
Yeah.
That was it. So anyway, so I was following her on Instagram. She put it up like yesterday where it was a question and then she flipped the whiteboard and there's this big circle, a pie. And she goes, life is like, you know, 95% of that pie. And then one little 5% cut out of it was commands. And not everything's about commands. Like commands are cool. Sits and down and come and weave and this. Like it's all very cool. You can make your dog
behave. It's the minority, isn't it?
It's like saying all of my life is language because I talk all the time. And it's like life is so much more than just language, far out. Like life is like so many different facets that it's like infinite. So same with life. And that's why this whole podcast is Life with Your Dog is because it's not about training to be flashy and to be awesome looking and to have like this, would just say obedient dog because of dog commands. It's about life skills. It's about how the dog sees the world. What relationship connection do you have? What sort of clarity do you provide? What do your tools mean to the dog? How do you provide fulfillment, enrichment, and activity? All that comes into it. And that's why, like, at puppy class, it's kind of conflicting because, again, it's my second puppy class I've ever run. So it's going not as bad as I initially thought. There's a few things that I'll tweak, but yesterday was actually a really good session that, like, everyone was so happy. Session one's always a little bit harder, especially when you're getting random people coming to group class and you're meeting that random person for the first time in a group setting. It's, I do get people to watch my intro video and, like, you know, listen to some of these episodes so that they can be familiar with me, but I don't know them.
Because it used to be that you wanted to have done, like, a couple of lessons with them, right?
And that's before for the group? Adult group classes.
Oh, this is for puppy. Right. Yeah.
For the adults, dogs over 6 months, you have to at least done one because I can't show you slip leads and, like, basic stuff.
Oh, so at the moment, you're doing a puppy block, are you?
Yeah. So
I see.
Right after the group classes, like, for the adults, I'll do the puppy one. So, oh, okay. So just smash them out to me one day. The big days.
Oh, right. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
So having them come, it's a little bit difficult because I'll say things and people may not be familiar because I'm obviously teaching from the beginning, even though people that do my one-on-ones can have the option to come to my puppy class as well. Cause a lot of my clients were going to puppy school and seeing me. And I thought that was kind of weird. You're going to get two different conflicting conversations about dogs, which will affect your training and, of course, affect your dog's confidence if you don't know what you're doing. And also the amount of stupid advice I've been hearing puppy class people and teachers or trainers or whatever you want to call them, like the amount of shit that I was hearing was killing my life. And I'm like, we have to put a stop to this.
Let's hear some examples.
Just like advice on desexing or letting all the puppies off the leash so they can just mob each other and freak them out.
Royal rumbling.
That dog's a little bit too much. Maybe you just sit on the corner and say nothing and do nothing now because I haven't got the skills to deal with your puppy.
Hey guys, it's Luke. I just wanted to take a moment out of the podcast to thank you guys for tuning in. Obviously, we don't just do this show just to hear our own voices. We love the fact that you guys take the time out of your day to listen to our episodes each and every week. And on that note, if you are enjoying it, we'd really appreciate it if you took a moment to leave us a review or a rating on your favorite podcast listening app. So whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, if you could hit pause on this episode and go and leave a review or a rating on the platform that you're listening into, we'd really appreciate it. It helps other people like yourself find the podcast. And helps us to reach more listeners and hopefully grow the show and grow the community around it. So we'd really appreciate it if you could. And thanks for listening.
What about the desexing?
Well, just like desexing weight, like advice of being desexed too early, six months old.
What about the vaccination and the like going outside?
Yeah, do they? Like, I don't. I think a lot of people are really hesitant. Like, that's why a lot of people ask me, oh, should I come to the school because he hasn't had his vaccines yet? Mm-hmm. Where if you went to the vet, you're going to a place that's 10 million times more contaminated than
where
the
school. Where do sick dogs go?
Yeah, where the school, vet. There is no dogs there ever. And if there is any animals, there could be foxes at nighttime coming through. I'm not sure what sort of disease they harbor, but like, what's the likelihood of contamination on the school, on the concrete, in the car park? Like it's very unlikely. So there's some of that, just how to teach commands, or also they didn't really learn much. People are like, I went there and it was literally a waste of money. Nothing happened. They taught us all the things that we already knew, bit of feeding advice. And that was
I think for the most part, they mean well, but I think a lot of the time it's just a funnel to have them get new vet clients.
That as well as there could be like other trainers hiring out that space. And then, you know, like just teeing up with and collaborating with the vet. But I don't know. You know, there's some places that do really well as well. So it's not like all of them are shit and mine's the only good one. But coming to my puppy school means that we're working. And my whole point of why I brought it up is that, so every session has like a thing to work on. So session one is about foundation building, charging a marker, you know, get your puppy out and about, you know, working on a bit of play, toilet training advice, all the kind of like the things that all puppy owners are going to ask straight up.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of exposure. And then session two is more about getting the puppy to be more engaged with you. Bit of play, bit of focus on me. And I don't let the puppies play too much. But yesterday was more about exposing them to the world. We're talking about introducing new sounds, different places. If you see a grate, you walk them over a grate. If you need to pick your puppy up, pick them up, put them on a bench, pull them back down. If you're not doing these things and you're not preparing them for when they're older. So the best way to provide confidence building is doing it from a puppy. So
Think long term, right?
Yeah.
Treat the dog like a blank book and you got to fill the pages.
Fill the pages with things that you know they're going to do, like picking a puppy up and putting them on a metal table. You'd say, why would I do that for? What happens when you go to the vet? Mm. And then they freak out the vet or the groomer. So when I picked up that boxer, oh my God, the puppy was not having it. He was not happy. He was all crawling, swarming, trying to bite me. And I put him down. Session, like in the one of the earlier classes, I tell people, grab your puppy by the collar and the harness, not like strangle them and hold them tight, but hold it firm enough so that if they're squirming, you hold it, you hold them in a position, even if your arm's around them, you hold your puppy until they just calm down. Just showing them, hey, when I'm holding you or trying to pick you up, you don't squirm. If you squirm and I let go, now the puppy's getting out, then the puppy gets dropped, puppy bites you, you need to pick them up in a dodgy situation. Now the situation got worse. You're at the vet, it's already dodgy on a molecular scent level. Now you have to go to a place where the guy's staring, the puppy's sore, you have to pick them up, put them on the thing. If you're not preparing the puppy for those different experiences, then it's going to be very hard. So in talking about the whole life and then that little bit is commands, we teach commands in puppy school for sure. Sit down, come and bed. Very, very basic commands. I'm hesitant to go too far with the commands, but I do want to show people like, hey, look, they're still functioning
the basics
commands.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, like let's kind of push the envelope a little bit so that you have things to work on. But the majority of those puppy classes have nothing to do with commands. They have everything to do with building confident puppies. A confident puppy that's a little too rambunctious, we can layer in some manners when they get a bit older. But too many manners and not enough exposure when young is the leading cause of why
you can
struggle.
You can build the engine and you can put the brakes on later, but it's hard to build the engine if you put the brakes on too hard at the start.
Yeah, nice analogy.
Yeah. 100%. But what does Glenn say? I remember from the NDTF, you can cut off, but you can't cut on, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, you're better off having probably a little bit of an almost overconfident puppy, and then later on, just temper it a bit.
I agree.
Rather than squashing the bloody thing when it's young.
So, then when you think about confidence building, the best answer, like most answers, is do as much as you can from when they're puppies. So like next week, Daniel, who's helping me with my classes, is and with training, is bringing like an inflatable sort of pool, not if like a fold-out one, because I was going to bring the shell, the clam shells, and lug it in my car every day, but I thought that was a bit clunky. So he's going to bring that out. We're going to fill it up with bottles and balls and cans and stuff, and then we're just going to lure the puppies in there and get them to run around in there and just get them used to the fact that there's different sounds, different textures. The thing moves a little bit. It's just an odd thing to get used to, but the more odd things you do, the more clarity you have with new experiences. It's just like with people. Like when I was young, my parents took on quite a bit of holidays, seeing different things. I did so many different activities. I did Greek dancing. I went to private school, all the different extracurricular things you have to do there, you know, and I had different type of friends doing different things. We're out the bush, but we're also doing other stuff. My point there is that through my youth, and my building blocks, I was exposed to so many different things, especially traveling. Traveling just in and of itself just exposes you to like so much new experiences that you have more confidence just in general because you know what the world is. You know how you've had to hold yourself in different ways in different situations. So when another odd thing comes your way, you can just deal with it a lot easier rather than freaking out.
Yes.
So from puppies. Now, let's just say like, look, man, I want to build my dog's confidence and he's not a puppy. What should I do? It would be doing regular activities, having a goal at the end of it. Just like when we were talking before with Luke, I've got my three different exercise books next to me, the big goals, the to-dos, and the book that has all the random shit in it that I keep it all together. But my clarity of having everything there, kind of when I start to get overwhelmed, I just go back to my book and be like, all right, I'm going to cross this off. I'm going to work on this later. You have to have like some sort of plan. And put things together that's pragmatic and that's easy to kind of see that you know where you're going. Otherwise, you're just going around circles and circles and one thing leads to another thing and then you freak out. You get overwhelmed, too much, like the straw that broke the camel's back. So with your adult dog, you want to do little tasks that you have. And another reason why I mentioned the books is that when I do all that work and then I can cross that thing off that list, whew, what a satisfaction.
You get that little dopamine hit.
Just a little hit, right? So, but also you know that you're on the right track. And then when you look back on it, you're like, I've gone somewhere. So if you're not documenting, because if you're not documenting where you're at, what you're trying to do, you may not know how to support your dog through those situations. And also coming back to the appeasement is that you want a dog that has some level of appeasement behaviors for sure. You want them to be able to deal with the situation by creating peace. But I just don't think forcing a dog into submission so they can be confident with something, they're two opposites. So I'm not sure if I answered too much about the appeasement behaviors, which would probably be a whole entire podcast, but I wanted to tie those in together because I want to answer it. But more so is that just because your dog's now super submissive and showing appeasement behaviors in a context, it doesn't mean, and they're not showing the let's just say, for example, you go on the bridge and normally the dog lays down flat and then just crawls and jumps and barks and tries to jump down the stairs. Where if you're up on the stairs, getting onto the bridge, and the dog like has his ears back and his paw up and he's looking at you trying to like, hey, I'm here. It's helping you go through the process, but you're not there yet. Yeah, he's not, look to that. He's not trying to jump off the stairs and he's not pissing himself and he's not, you know, like brakes on, like not walking. He's like, he's doing it. Yeah, but he's not doing it with valor or with
vigor, yeah.
Yeah, like he's not like doing it like, yeah, I'm here. I want it to be like, it's a bridge. I fuck bridges up. Like, you know, that's
kind of- Hey, bridges for breakfast.
So, but then they can be, but not all dogs have that potential. So that's another thing is that you got to honor what your dog is and what and who they are and what they are. And there's going to be certain thresholds for certain dogs. And that just is what it is. Like Spades is not a confident dog in so many random situations, where Chili would be confident in so many situations, but with others, he probably won't be as much as Spades would be.
Well, they're all individuals, aren't they?
Totally. And being clear about where you're going, I think, is the most important thing. So I'm going to wrap that episode there. Otherwise, I'm just going to go. Let me just quickly just go here, John. Yeah, so just that last little paragraph, right? He says, so my understanding is that if you're helping the dog overcome small challenges, you can build up to the bigger ones. And it was interesting, my take. So, yeah, I agree with that. But it's very like, it's not direct. It's very indirect, isn't it? Like build, like go traveling with your son when they're young so that when he's older, he can talk to different demographics of people. He can understand that things are different. So when he sees something, he doesn't like go, hey, that's weird. I don't like it. Or he gets scared of the things that he doesn't know. It's not a direct thing, but it's something that certainly helps building blocks so that when you are working with creating that confident dog in a certain situation context, that they have the tools and the skills and you have the tools and skills to help them through. And I think that's a good place to end.
Good place to finish.
Yeah, 100%. Well,
all right.
Thanks for listening.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen.
Love your work. Oh, we haven't had an Apple podcast review since like October last year. So please, guys, hit us up.
Should we forgive them?
I totally forgive you, but I'm still upset. Give us a review.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, that's the worst when your parents say that to you. You're like, oh shit. Should I be
more I guess concerned? We can forgive you this time.
Now, look, just hit it up. It really helps the algorithm. It helps us out. We want to know what you guys are saying. So say it out to the people. If you have something not nice to say, keep it to yourself. But if you have something nice to say with a good 5 stars, please put it up there. But appreciate you guys listening. And until next time, have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Life With Your Dog. Please share with your friends if you're enjoying our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others find the show. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, Life With Your Dog Podcast. My name's Panos, and to keep up with my dog training adventures, tips and techniques, you can find me on Instagram at np_dog_training, my website npdogtraining.com or my YouTube channel, Nutris Pooches.
Thanks for listening, guys. My name's Luke. If you'd like to find out more about my dog training services, you can find me at www.kizuna, that's K-I-Z-U-N-A, canine.com.au. I'm also on Instagram at kizuna canine training. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.